the Hoosier Surveyor Podcast, brought to you by the Indiana Society of Professional Land Surveyors.
All right, well, happy February 16th, 2024. This is Ryan Swingley, your voice of the Hoosier Surveyor Podcast. Joined today, of course, always our producer and now president of the society, Ryan Selby.
Hey, hey.
Today we are graced for the first time, I think, on the podcast. You've never been on a remote session or anything. Our vice president of the society, Don Williams, and of course, multiple-time guest, Eric Meeks, president of the ISPLS Foundation and board of directors of ISPLS. So a couple things in this podcast today. We're kind of, we just had a meeting this morning, our second official board meeting of the year. For those that don't know, we have a meeting on Wednesday morning of the conference, and that's typically comprised of two meetings. One meeting is the outgoing president, which is the bulk of the meeting, and then the secondary meeting is the incoming president has a small meeting to kind of nominate officers and really kind of put together a vision for, you know, what they would like to accomplish for the year. So today was our first get down to business meeting, and we had some good topics of discussion. One of them primarily being our financial advisors review. So every year we changed that to biannually or every year?
Every year.
We talk
it,
with...
A lot of times it happened at the convention meeting, which just seemed like too much. So yeah. I would have to say I do prefer it not outside of that meeting.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
There was too much going on with the convention.
We have our lobbyists come in and talk at the convention meeting. And so there's a lot of things that go on at that,
And it was hard to get them to come to Fort Wayne and French Lick and the places around. So
it was good to have our financial advisors Wellington in with us today. And, you know, ISPLS from a financial perspective is still doing pretty good. We're riding the wave we had of COVID, which was a pretty good year for us. We're split between about 50% equity and 50% fixed cash. So we got about 50% in the market. There was some discussion about capitalizing potentially on the market situation right now. As you know, a couple days ago we had a dip in the market. Our investors are predicting that's a short run, but you know, in election year, I think all bets are off. We don't know what might happen. So there has been some discussion about a reallocation to a 60-40 split so that we can maybe capitalize on some aggressive growth opportunities as we approach the election and the Fed drop in the interest rates. So what are you guys' comments? What are your thoughts? I mean, the 50-50 we've had in place for 27 years, it's served us pretty well, but
it's let us ride the average. We get to stay at a point where we're fairly solid as far as going in to know what, you know, what we're doing, what we have available to do. It lets us ride that average. You know, we did in the discussion, we talked about the volatility that would come with the kind of the up and down split in the equity and the fixed. But it's really a guessing game, as opposed to, you know, we're not buying individual stocks here. The investments are a mutual fund type scenario, so it's not like we have a lot of leeway of, you know, hitting big at the roulette table, so to speak.
And we are set up with a 50-50 allocation. However, Wellington has the ability to go 20% either way.
Yeah, but
they've never done that. And that's why I wouldn't be opposed to increasing that to either 60-40 or even 70-30, because they can always go back to the 50-50 at a 70-30.
Absolutely.
And we've never gone below a 50-50 allocation.
No.
So I don't see an issue with going to a 70-30. You know, it gives us the opportunity.
I don't think there's increased risk dramatically.
Well, I looked at just from a calculation standpoint, based on historical projections they were showing us at the meeting, it's about a 5% swing either way. So at the best of the market, we're looking at about an additional 5% return. The worst of the market, we're talking about, you know, probably a negative 5%, not loss, but
you know, reduced gain.
Reduced gain. So it's not a huge risk. If you look at 50% of what we have in that 5%, it equates to about $8,500. So not a lot of risk one direction or the other. If we would go to a 70-30, obviously there would be some increased incentive gains or losses. You know, we're at a time now where everything's getting more expensive. I think if we can capitalize on the market opportunity, I think we should. I mean, we talked about this a couple years ago, and we opted to keep our allocation as it was. And the way I saw it, we left some money on the table, you know, as the market panned out that year. Now, of course, it can always go the other direction. Mm-hmm. We don't know what's going to happen. No one has that crystal ball. But, you know, we certainly keep in mind that it is our duty to be fiscally responsible with the society's money. But, you know, so we need to weigh out every option here and look at what we're going to do. But there, it could be some increase in allocation, depending on what we see as the best opportunity for us at the time. But that's going to be an ongoing discussion. We are going to do a financial review here in the next couple months, see what our goals are. And that was one of the things that I thought was interesting. They said, well, if you don't have any financial goals, you're best to keep it where it is. But if you can identify financial goals, then you might want to change your allocation. And that kind of brings up the idea that, you know, there was a discussion at the business meeting this year about a potential 5% moving 5% annually of ISPLS funds to the foundation funds.
I think there should be some sort of plan, strategic long-term plan financially. That's not something we've been in a position to do at different times throughout the most recent years. But I think we're at a point now where we can look at setting something in motion, some kind of a long-term plan. And when I say long-term plan, that doesn't mean we're financing for the long-term, but at least some kind of allocation plan with money that comes in to the society, where a lot of times it's been we just wait for someone to come up with an idea to fund or do something with. But if we can get that where we look at, you know, visit the foundation at budget time as opposed to just any time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think we have a lot of opportunity. And like you said, if we decide financially we want to, me personally, if we're going to contribute 5% to the foundation annually, I'd want to try to capture that 5% back, because historically our financial goals have been extremely simple. Have up to 1 year's operating budget in our coffers. So, I mean, we're right there. What we have to decide is, do we really need that full year's operating budget?
Well, and the other discussion was, what is an operating budget? If we have no members, we're not going to have a conference, then that we won't have those expenses. So what is a year's operating budget?
Yeah, because we're talking about, when you talk about rainy day, that, you know, that's what you're talking about.
Right. Yeah.
Well, you look at the situation with COVID, that put a big what if on our situation, and we did lose membership through that time. We lost some conference participation.
We were
lucky they let us out of the
very
contract
fortunate.
Right.
So we would have paid that contract out of pocket with no revenue stream potentially. So there is the idea that, you know, we need to probably keep, you know, a year's annual budget for RGI to operate, plus maybe half or whatever we outlay in cash for the conference, up to the conference, in case there would be some catastrophic event where no one could attend and everyone wanted their money back, you know, we would need to be in a position to financially recover from that.
Yeah.
So that's definitely some conversations we're going to be having in the coming months. The foundation is doing quite well. For those that don't know, we moved ISPLS. Used to carry a good bit more in our investments, but what was the year, Eric?
2012.
2012, we moved $200,000.
Basically split
the, I think.
Yeah, split the funds that ISPLS had at the time. And created the foundation for the sole purpose of being the financial granting or funding arm of ISPLS. ISPLS runs the business of ISPLS, kind of the corporate side. When it comes to those in the community looking for grants, looking for money that ISPLS could do with projects, at that time, the ISPLS board said, we need a separate board to handle that. We don't want to mix that in with what the structure is with ISPLS. So that's how the foundation was created.
Can you give us some examples of what they funded over the years?
Most recently, we did the digitizing of the railroad maps. Before that, we did through Clayton Hogston, did the digitizing of the complete set of federal and state notes for the public land survey system, which was absolutely monumental.
Yeah, where can people access that information?
There's a link on the ISPLS website that will take you to a ArcGIS map, which is totally clickable on a GIS platform. You go in, find your section, click on it, and it gives you a link to all those notes and plats. And throughout the years, you know, any kind of request for equipment funds for Vincennes University, funding state or student participation in NSPS through Cincinnati State, you know, all you think of any time that there was money kind of contemplated or asked of ISPLS, those requests came through the foundation.
Yeah, so also scholarships. How much do we pay out annually in scholarships?
We is it 8,000, 9,000?
Yeah,
structured.
I think it's 8, maybe. That sounds familiar.
But there's even more. We've got the McIntyre Endowment through Purdue. Mm-hmm. That's not included in what. That's totally funded at the Purdue level, so that doesn't count toward what money that the foundation gives out. But we've got the Peggy Archer Scholarship. Mm-hmm. We've got the Benchmark Scholarship. The foundation meets Monday night, and the new scholarship committee chair has talked about maybe standing up another additional scholarship geared more toward hybrid students. That's becoming a very popular trend, and we want to try to capture some of the ways to contribute to those as well.
And so right now the foundation has about $450,000, and they have a 50-50% equity and fixed cash allocation as well. Now, I know that sounds like a lot of money, but the goal of any foundation is to – be able to give a certain percentage of your funds away annually in perpetuity. So how much is that right now, Eric?
It's about 19. 19,000 is the foundation's operating budget. Out of that comes, split a little bit out for, we pay a shared cost to the administrative side of ISPLS through RGI. So some of that's allocated. Some of it's allocated toward just expenses that the foundation has with, like, gaming licenses and stuff for the raffles. And but we look at somewhere between $12,000 and $15,000 a year dedicated for grants and scholarships.
And that's a percentage. So the more money that you have, the more of that.
The percentage 5%.
5% of the three-year average.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, at the
50-50 right now, we're getting about 6-7% a year.
Right.
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 So it's – and one of the things that's been noted is we have never – since the inception of the foundation, we have not ever once withdrew money to operate from our investment funds. That's ideally perfect, but it's not meant to be that way. It's meant to be that is self-sufficient from those investment funds. The raffle has brought in a little bit. We've used some of the funds that have become available to subsidize and not dip into those investments and let them grow. And that in turn will let the operating budget and the amount of money that can go to grants every year increase.
Yeah, for sure. And we've done some things where we've got some money in and the cash flow has just worked out to where we haven't had to touch the funds. That's always good. The larger it grows, and if we can continue to fund it with things like the raffles at the convention and stuff, that's definitely the way to do it.
Another key item that's worth mentioning is the MOUs, or Memorandum of Understanding, with the chapters. The three participating chapters across ISPLS has really helped out.
Yeah.
Having that pool of assets as they come in, we allocate those to help with the grants and things, and it doesn't necessarily we don't have to draw down from the overall pool of money in those investments that helps the foundation run. So I don't see that always being the case, and I think it was kind of foreshadowed that, you know, at some point the foundation's going to be funding itself based on those funds.
So let's say, you know, someone in our society wants to request funds from the foundation. What's that process look like?
Go to ispls.org. The foundation tab will give you a link to the grant request application. If you want help filling out that application, contact one of the foundation board of directors members or an ISPLS director. It's pretty self-explanatory, but at the same time, you know, just put down on there what it is that you're looking for funding for. Those come in. One of the things is we do like the formal process of getting that grant request in, not just a phone call and saying, hey,
give me money.
Throw some cash. You know, we want to kind of dive into it a little bit. And I think that application answers a lot of the questions that directors are going to have when reviewing the foundation a grant request. So that's one of the purposes of the formal application.
And some of that's just like, you know, one of the questions is state the project, how the project enhances the purpose of the foundation and some things like that. So that's what we're talking about. We just want to know, you know, how this money is going to benefit the society and the profession. And so the questions are fairly simple, but that's the bulk of it is just kind of.
So you mean you're not going to buy my company a new GPS rover or anything?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Oh, dang it. Yeah. So generally speaking, these are projects that are going to benefit the surveying society or public as a whole, you know, the historical preservation of documents, the purchase of a 3D sandbox that can be used for workforce development or outreach.
Yeah, all perfect.
All those kind of examples of things been done. So, yeah, I mean, I think Wellington did a great job on a financial wrap up. They gave us some things to think about, some goals to set, and give ourselves some financial direction. So I look forward to those discussions. What else do we have on tap for the meeting today?
You know, I think since we're on the financial topic, we should just go ahead and finish on that. But, you know, we talked a little more about that question that came up at the business meeting about what we're going to do with our money. And so, you know, I think in April, I've asked Brian to have somebody come in to kind of help guide the board in that discussion. So that we can start looking and identifying that rainy day fund, you know, what our investment policy is going to be and that kind of thing. So, you know, that was definitely a big part of the discussion, even after the Wellington presentation that they did on our finances.
Right. So kind of a goal setting for financial goals, which I love. You guys know how I love goal setting sessions. So. All right. Second agenda item was priority strategic goals.
We didn't get too deep into that.
We kind of bypassed some of these that would be in further discussion in our
I think one topic.
Online meeting.
I think one topic that was not really officially visited, but we did discuss a little bit about, was the membership. Mm-hmm. Expired members that we want to try to recapture.
Yeah, and, you know, here a couple months back, we started adding into our membership report that we get every meeting. We had Brian kind of give us a breakdown of kind of some percentages of how we're doing on our statistics as far as, are we capturing a lot of the Indiana licenses, and, you know, kind of where our membership is at geographically and that kind of thing. So, you know, and you start looking at some of these numbers and some things pop up, like, you know, our professional members right now are at about 361 out of the 763 licenses in Indiana. So, you know, it's one of those like, okay, you know, how do we start capturing a bigger percentage of that population? Mm-hmm. You know,
and a lot of that is out of state. You know, I think there's a
percentage.
That,
in the donut states, there's 170 surveyors. So 22% of the licensed surveyors are in donut states. So, but I think as the numbers are trending in the downward direction at the moment, we got to work on making sure that we retain as many of those members as we can to keep our numbers where they need to be.
Well, it also makes you stop and pause and think about member benefits. What is it mm-hmm, we do yeah. as a society that attracts members? We discussed yeah. that some at lunch even.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are some of the positive things that ISPLS does for, you know, all of surveying in the state of Indiana? And you can't have that conversation without discussing our lobbyists and what we've done politically. And mm-hmm. some of the things that the needles that we've been able to move from a legislative perspective that I don't think we would have been able to do without the state that society, without ISPLS.
Yeah. Well, and bring it up. You know, the reason we are still able to have a license is because we were talking in front of the PLA. We had to bring and defend the fact that we should be licensed professionals.
Right.
That's
happened twice, probably over the last decade that IPLA has considered removing surveying as a registered profession in the state of Indiana. And so, I mean, obviously that protects
that's on their agenda. That's not something that's going to go away either. It's not something that's something that as their administration changes, they visit all the time. So we have to be there at those instances.
Right, and I don't even know how many of our members realize that happened.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. But if you are a fan of right of entry, that was something mm-hmm. that came from our society. If you like statute of limitations, which I know a lot of surveyors mm-hmm. should really like that one, that was something that came from our society and our legislative committee. And even, you know, we testified this summer with support of our lobbyist for showing support for NDOT to make a capital investment in improving their receivers and the NCORS network, little things like that that our society doesn't see, that we are in the background, in the shadows, if you will.
We've got
making happen.
We've
state.
Got a bill right now.
Mm-hmm.
In Senate Bill 36 to make it a civil penalty for removing a permanent survey marker.
Mm-hmm.
That's happening as we're sitting here and
we're testifying.
We're working on it. There's something I think it happened. Like you said, it happens a lot more than what most might think.
But we do those things for members and non-members alike. And mm-hmm. and if you like the results of what we've done and have done in the past, and you know, we would encourage you to support that, you know, financially. It's not a huge burden to become a ISPLS member. Obviously, there's some other benefits, such as discounts at our conference, resources to be able to find other surveyors, colleagues. Mm-hmm. We maintain a list of firm members or firm cap numbers, I believe, on our website. So if you're in workforce development, if you're presenting at schools, we have a lot of resources there for you to share. So, I mean, I think we all, member and non-member alike, we all have similar goals. If you've had a problem in the past with ISPLS, hey, give me a call. I'd love to hear it. I'd love to talk about it. I'd love to talk about how we can mitigate that in the future and how we can welcome you back in society with open arms. So I think it was a good discussion. I mean, we're only capturing about 55% of licensed surveyors in the state of Indiana, which is not terrible. But I think those numbers can be better. So
yeah, I'd like to see them increase.
We need to figure out what non-member engagement might look like and how we can encourage people to get more involved.
So. And unfortunately, we're a small, diminishing community, and we need to stick together, and we need to band together, and we need everybody to help out.
For sure.
I think over time, those issues will maybe self-correct, I hope.
I agree. And I, you know, the stuff that Rodney's doing with workforce development, with the help of a lot of others behind him as well, but, you know, the workforce development's
been phenomenal. We're averaging, I know the first year we were well over 30 events attended by ISPLS as a showing at whether it's the School Counselors Association convention or just, you know, getting the word out, which is more than, you know, that has probably happened in the last 10 years.
Well, that's why we're currently trending down. But, you know, I'm hopeful that these efforts that over the last couple of years, we've been seeing such an just surge of efforts in this realm of the workforce development and outreach, and
it's a slow moving creature.
Yeah, right. That you know, we may not see those fruits for a few years, but hopefully, you know, these efforts will pay off in the future, and we'll start seeing that trend turn.
It may be about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, we need everybody's help to get involved
for sure.
I think at one time the one of the surveying programs in the state was down to 8 students, and now it's at 60. So just that in itself is pointing that, you know, a little bit of effort may go a long way. And at the onset, I said 10 years, you know, 10 years until you really start seeing all those returns come back on some of those investments that ISPLS has made. And I think we're seeing some of those already.
Mm-hmm.
How about a save the date?
Yeah, that's what I was getting ready to transition to, and I'm going to let you take the wheel on that then.
Well, I don't know. It's going to be a fun time.
Well, I mean, so for those that don't know, every president that has served the society is automatically a member of the past president's council. Mm-hmm. And we've always struggled with some things to do. You know, we don't get a lot of charges from, you know, the existing administration, and so we kind of took, you know, I'll give Vince Barr some credit.
Vince gets all the credit. He gets 100% of the credit.
Absolutely. You know, the Surveying Olympics.
August 31st, save the date, August 31st at Brown County State Park. There's going to be, the final details are still being worked out.
Now, is this going to be annually or just every 4 years like a normal Olympics?
I would love to see it annually.
I would,
sure.
Too.
I would, too. Mm-hmm.
I think the well, this will be it's something that was here in the past and was kind of missed. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't have a lot of social events, this is going to be a 100% social event for ISPLS and
family friendly
mm-hmm. Picnic, barbecue. Come and just watch. Come into the park. Just hang out. Stop by for 10 minutes. But we'd really like you to participate in the games. Mm-hmm. It'll be we're calling it it's dubbed the Survey Olympics because we'll have some surveying activities that will be individuals, teams, and student teams participated in for bragging rights and maybe a little trophy here or there. But I think it'll be fun. I think it's something that's missed. I think it's something that's going to bring everybody back into the spirit of surveying at its core.
Right.
And I look forward to it.
Well, you know, as a society, we should, you know, strive to be a band of brothers and sisters, and we need a little bit more social activity to do that.
Yeah.
You know, we have, you know, way more in common than we do not in common, so we need to celebrate that as much as possible.
Yep.
Any ideas on some of the events? Is that something we're willing to share at this point?
I think so.
Okay, give us a handful.
Well, there'd be an angle guess. Stiff leg tripod.
Four post instrument?
Well, I don't know. We'll see. And then
still to come on that.
I think we've got a couple of those in storage that can be used. What else? Pace count. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not going to be a 3-day event. This is going to be an afternoon spent. There will be some food available and served. Think of August cookout kind of food, chips, potato chips, and things like that. But hot dogs, hamburgers, maybe. We're still working out those details, so we haven't set the menu just yet. Possibly some barbecue if we can get Ryan to cook.
Smoke Swingley, something. Not Selby. Yeah. You don't want Selby to cook.
I'm getting a little rusty, so. But we do have the pavilion reserved.
It is. Yes. It's going to be at the lower shelter, if you're familiar with Brown County State Park.
At the north entrance.
The north entrance. As soon as you go through the double covered bridge, it's the big open field there, kind of behind the pool, the outdoor pool. But like I said, it's going to be fun. At least you'll get to a state park, if nothing else, for that nice hot summer day, hopefully. No rain, so we'll start acting right now so we get some good weather.
You know, that segues us well into the ISPLS convention review, because Gary held the Surveyor in Jeopardy class, which I got to admit was probably one of the funnest.
It was rather entertaining.
CEUs that I've ever gotten. Yes.
And our team won, Ryan.
But that was a very, very good time. So, what did you guys think of the conference this year?
I thought it was great. The classes were just phenomenal. Everything from Gary's Surveyor in Jeopardy all the way through I thought the speakers were great this year, for sure.
New venue. It was we were in Central Indiana, new venue, and not only a new venue to us, but it was also fairly new. There was an energy with that.
I've experienced a couple of new venues over the years, and there's always a little bit of growing pains that come with figuring out somewhere new. When we were at Marriott East for 10 years, hell, we were on autopilot.
I bet parked in the same parking space every year.
Aside from the years they were under construction, years when they were under construction was kind of brutal. But, the latter years, we had it all figured out. We had it down. And, when we moved to French Lick, there was some growing pains there. Mm-hmm. There were some issues that happened there. Fort Wayne, for the most part, has been pretty uneventful as far as issues.
It's a nice big venue, and I think their staff is very helpful in Fort Wayne. And this year, I know that was one of the complaints, was a little bit of the tight spacing at this year, but we oversold this year. We had a phenomenal turnout this year at the convention, and we didn't expect that large of a turnout.
There's a couple things you never know about the conference. Number one, we planned for 425, and I believe 460 signed up.
Yeah.
And of those 460, you usually have no idea who's going to show up on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. That's we almost never have full attendance on Wednesday afternoon. So what we normally do is we only have two sessions, and we keep the rooms, we don't rent the whole space out for the Wednesday afternoon. That obviously saves us a little bit of money. But this year we did have a lot of people show up, and it was crowded. I mean, the room I was in, the Gary Kent in Jeopardy, I don't recall us having anyone spilled out in the hall. But the other session that Dennis Mullen put on, they were spilled out in the hall quite a ways. And that's unfortunate, because those people sitting in the hall are probably not having, the good experience that they should. So we'll have to.
We're at a size that a lot of venues, we're either too small or we're too big.
Right.
We're right there in the middle, where our choices for venues have seemed to be very limited to where we can go and accommodate every, making that fit just right,
And normally when we plan for 400 or 420, we have less than that. We would expect more.
Right. But other than that, like those that listen to our convention preview podcast, beautiful venue. Mm-hmm. Excellent location. Food, I thought, was pretty good, and I'm, you know, I can be kind of a food critic. Mm-hmm. So I thought things were pretty decent. I liked everything about it. I think that they were spaced out well. I didn't really care for the way the vendors in the lunchroom were kind of spread out along the wall. I probably would have preferred they kind of be over in one area. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you tend to kind of gravitate towards your one vendor, and then you don't get to maybe pay attention to the others as much as you should. So that'd be one thing I would probably change if we did that venue.
I think, didn't they do that at Fort Wayne? They kind of sectioned off one end of the...
Yeah, correct. Yeah. So I'd like to probably duplicate something similar to that would be ideal.
And I think some of that floor plan changed there at the last minute when we started getting the numbers at the very end. I think we had to adjust the floor plan a little bit. I think that's also why some of the booths ended up in the hallway. I think that was a change because we needed more seating in the dining room for the guests. Yeah. So,
yeah, and there's always some downside to, you know, we had a block of rooms, but obviously other people had to spill into other hotels in the area. So in the evening, you know, when things are done, it didn't feel as close as it did. Like, you know, one thing I love about French Lick was, you know, especially back in the day when we had it at French Lick, there was nothing to do there. So you were a captive audience when you were staying at French Lick. Now, the last time we had it, a little bit more options in French Lick today. But a lot of options around the venue we had this year. So it didn't make it as intimate of a bar situation as we normally would have. And so there's some things that you don't always think about when you're choosing a venue that we'll have to consider.
Well, and I think consistency, you know, like you said, it's kind of fluctuated. It seems like we get a little influx of members that we plan for around the renewal time because they need the continuing education credits, which you need every year, so you might as well just come be a part of ISPLS and continue with it. And the more consistent we become as members, the better we can plan and put on those conventions.
Right. So as we had mentioned in our convention preview podcast, that Vincennes University decided to take advantage of the location and put together a fundraising event at Topgolf on Wednesday night. I think it was extremely well attended. I think everyone that was there had a good time. The criticism I would have is I think it wasn't as well advertised as it should be. There was a lot of members, I think, that didn't know. And because of the number limitation that we had at Topgolf, we had to tell people, well, if you weren't signed up before, you can't really go, which was unfortunate. So I think I would like to see us maybe integrate the sign up for something like that into the ISPLS conference sign up. I think we would get a lot more people that would be willing to pretend that was a paid event. You know, obviously we're trying to raise some funds for Vincennes University Equipment Fund.
They made money instead of it costing them money.
Right. Yes. So over the years, you know, we've had an alumni event that would take from our coffers, and this time we were able to add to those coffers. So win-win for everybody involved. Everyone had a great time. We were able to put together, I think, $3,000 or $4,000 for Vincennes University to help them fund equipment purchases, and I think it was a good event. So
definitely.
Thursday was, I mean, I can't remember the sessions I attended, but I felt everything was pretty good. Mm-hmm. The banquet probably wasn't well as attended as I would have hoped, and I think that really boils down to the availability of social opportunity. All the good restaurants in the area.
Every time we have a banquet in Indianapolis at the convention, it's an Indianapolis-held convention, the banquet seems to be less attended.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Correct.
We don't have a captive audience, so people end up going home.
Right. So, I mean, that's always a downside. Next year, we're going to be in Evansville. What's the event center? Does anyone know?
It's downtown. It's a convention center downtown. I think it's close to, what is that, the Ford Center down?
Okay.
Yeah. In Evansville. I think it's down close to that. And it's right downtown, I believe.
Right. I mean, I know that's at the far southwest corner of the state, but Evansville's a beautiful city. A lot of fun stuff to do. I hope we, you know, our northwest and northeast chapters find it in their hearts to come on down to Evansville. They do have a casino boat down there, just, you know, just saying. So
it's actually not a boat
anymore. They've moved that to an on-land casino now. So I think I've been in there once or twice since they've built that. It's pretty nice. They don't have a poker room as the last time I was there, which is a disappointment to me, but. Always fun to do a little gambling. And, you know, Vincennes is going to be looking for opportunities to put together another social-based fundraising event down in that area. There has been some discussion, maybe axe throwing, because I don't think Evansville has a top golf. So we'll be working on something to put together, and so it should be a good time. All in all, I mean, would we have another conference at this event center, you think? I mean, what were your thoughts?
I think so. I think it's a good option. I think there may be only one or two other candidates that could house ISPLS for a convention in central Indiana. So
that doesn't cost an arm and a leg.
And you know, who knows? Because we'll be there, we'll be looking in, what would it be, 2026, we'll be looking for a place in central Indiana.
And one of the considerations that I think we make every year is the bulk of us drive big trucks and fitting the parking. You know, that's why we try to avoid the downtown venues. You know, cost is definitely a big factor. I mean, they're considerably more expensive for the downtown venues than a venue like we had this year, but also the parking. And you're either having to pay to park and then try to fit most of our crew trucks into a parking garage, and that's never
it's not an easy commute in and out.
Yeah.
You know, if for those daily that are coming that may not be staying there, it's, you know, getting in and out is another consideration.
So those are definitely things that we consider when we're looking at venues in central Indiana.
Well, I think it's important to note that we don't just throw a dartboard and say, well, let's have a convention here. I mean, RGI puts this out to bid. So it gets in the hands of a lot of convention centers across the state, and they submit a proposal to us, and we find the best and most equitable proposal that we can, and that's how we make our decision. So it's not just at our whim. It has a lot to do with how we get information back. It is our goal to have the convention in Indianapolis on renewal years of your license. That way you can always get to the conference. You know, obviously Indianapolis is a central location that everyone can get to. But then also on off years, we wanted to get out and see other parts of the state. You know, the central Indiana chapter makes up a very large percentage of the society, and they said they're tired of being in Indianapolis all the time. They want to be able to stay in a hotel room and go get drunk like everybody else.
Stretch your legs.
Hey, I'm just being honest. I'm just being honest this morning or today. So, but all in all, I think it was a good conference. And then I think, you know, we'll have, you know, another good one in 2025. What were some of the notable sessions you guys recall? I mean, Dan Bland was a first-time speaker.
I heard a lot of positive.
Yeah.
I didn't attend his session, and I regret it.
Yeah,
it was geared more toward the supervision of the professional land surveying, and it was, you know, I think a lot of people going into it, and even Dan in the conversations we had, he thought it might be a little bit too taboo for what most people are used to hearing at the convention, but I think it was very well received, and I think it made a lot of good points that people usually talked about outside of the sessions that was brought in and kind of given a spotlight. So
yeah, we also had our local dynamic duo in Ryan Weber and Aaron Carl giving their sessions again, which are always well attended. Unfortunately, I was pulled away about mid-session through one of theirs for a billing emergency at work. See, this is another one of the downsides of us Indianapolis guys always having our conference here in Indianapolis. I know that, you know, what I had heard was you know, on par with their previous sessions, which has always been good. I did get a chance to sit in with Dennis Mullen on a session, which has always been one of my favorites, and he delivered. He didn't disappoint. So, anybody else? I missed out on some of the NGS stuff and a few of the more technical sessions, but anybody else have anything to add?
I sat in on the NGS one. There was a lot of technical information thrown out, but, you know, there's...
Yeah, that's one of those sessions that if you haven't attended it yet at the convention, you really need to look at attending in the coming years. We're about to have the datum change coming up, and the information he pushes out is very helpful to what is about to happen. So it's definitely something. Good thing with Jacob is being working for NGS is he's free. So he's invited every year to come speak with us. So I'm sure he will be back again next year. And it's definitely one that if you haven't attended, or even if you have, it probably be very beneficial to attend next
year.
Well,
it's probably part of your professional responsibility to make yourself aware of what's getting ready to happen.
Yeah.
So, and there's nobody better to speak about it than Jacob Heck, for sure.
I think
so.
We've missed a couple years without, and bringing the 811 folks back in. We need to add that session back in. I think we need to at least every other year make it available. That was always done a lot of times outside of the convention, where they would put on maybe a half-day CEU opportunity or something. And I think a lot of people attended it so much that they stopped signing up for it at the convention because they'd been there. Mm-hmm. But I think it's something that we need to work, make sure we work in and work in appropriately.
I attended the NDOT safety one, and it gave some good pointers of things to think about and consider when you're making your safety plans for projects, especially when you're in the roadway. So it was a good one, I thought.
Yeah. Anybody attend the mock trial?
I did not.
No, I was supposed to, but because of the weather moving in, I headed home a little earlier than I was planning.
That's always a fun one, too. I mean, Gary really strived for fun sessions this year, and I'm sure it was greatly appreciated. Yeah. So, not that his normal sessions aren't a little bit fun, but you know, the mock trial and the surveyors in jeopardy, it's hard to beat that. So,
definitely.
Hopefully, we'll have that back again. You know, right away. We need to. I think we already have Gary locked up for 2025.
I believe so.
Because we missed him a couple of years because of some interference in time with, I believe, the Maryland Society or someone on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
But good to get Gary here for the next couple of years for sure. All right, let's move off of the convention review and just take us home, Ryan, if you would, with a little bit of your vision of the presidency and where you'd like to see the society go this year.
You know, today's meeting was different. Being in charge is different than sitting in the back and just heckling.
That's why I'm the...
You're like, I ain't doing that again.
I lead from behind.
It was different, but no, it's good. I spoke about it a little bit at the end of the last preview for the convention episode, but you know, just volunteerism is going to be a big thing this year that I want to focus on. And, you know, we need to work as a board to kind of push out what those volunteer opportunities are for you to get involved with. So, you know, those are some things we're going to look at. We had a full slate today, so we didn't get into a bunch of those today. But that's something that in the coming months, keep an eye out in the email blasts. I'm sure we'll talk about it more on here, but there will be opportunities. Workforce development's got a full slate already going, and it's just going to continue to grow this year, and they will need people to help. So that's definitely a big one. I think the Survey Olympics is going to be a great opportunity to get involvement from the society and from our technicians. I mean, that was one of my goals, is to increase that involvement with the technicians. And this is an opportunity for the firms out there and anyone really to gather some of those younger guys and bring them to a fun event, get them out, get them introduced to some of us, and then hopefully that will spill into chapter meetings and different events that the society's putting on. We've got the young surveyors. We're going to look to try to get them going a little bit more this year. Maybe see, we'll probably see some more happening with that this year, but that's something I want to see kind of get started. And again, just be more opportunities for the younger generation to get involved. I mean, I think we're doing decent with our professional membership or our active activity from our professional members. But, you know, as we spoke earlier, I'd like to see more professional members in the society. But then, you know, getting those younger ones involved will hopefully lead to professional members in the future being involved. So those are kind of the big points for this year. So and my president's message is going to be coming out in the Hoosier Surveyor, and it kind of outlines all that as well.
Sure. So, yep. Well, I mean, this is our first podcast for 2024. What are we going to do this year?
Mm.
We need to find some people to interview. I really enjoy the getting to know a surveyor, kind of their life story scenario. Mm. I really like those. Obviously, we're going to try to do a recap of every board meeting, because the ultimate goal of this podcast was to create a secondary or tertiary avenue of communication with our society. Obviously, we've got Email Blast, the Hoosier Surveyor magazine itself, and then obviously the Hoosier Surveyor podcast. So we hope that this becomes your preferred delivery method of information about the society. But, you know, there's only so much we can cover here. But if you have suggestions, you know, feel free to look us up and you know, email myself or Ryan Selby, and we will we'll definitely consider putting it on the you know, on our podcast agenda.
And we can always use help with the podcast as well, as far as if you're out there listening and you think the audio sucks, or you're one of those kind of guys that likes doing that kind of stuff and you want to help out. I don't know a ton about this, but I've learned enough to at least get us going. But I'm willing to pass off some of that, especially with the 10-month-old at home.
About a 1-hour training session, you can bring them up to speed.
Yeah,
I've heard worse professional podcasts.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear. So,
and for those that, one of the things we failed to mention about the Surveying Olympics is we did set up a email address for that.
Oh yes.
So you can email
Olympics. At ispls.org.
Olympics at ispls.org. Email us your suggestions, your comments, concerns, anything. Anything that we might need to know to make this a successful event, please let us know.
If you want to volunteer, if you want to bring a piece of equipment to use in one of the events, if you got chains, if you got chaining pins, if you've got anything. Obviously, ISPLS and the Historic Society as well has, you know, certain things that we're going to use, but it would never hurt to have more. And we're going to tap Hoosier Hills chapter for some of the moderators for some of the events, or judges, so to speak, but we can always use more hands.
Don, anything in closing? Your first podcast. Have you ever been on a podcast in general, ever?
Never.
God, this is the first
time. It was good to have you.
First time.
Yeah.
Normally I'm racing to get home.
Uh-huh. Oh, and naturally, you picked the one with the snow going on outside.
It'll be melted by the time we get out, right?
Yeah, it'll be melted.
It's good that there's no windows in this room.
Right.
Yeah. He would have left 15 minutes ago.
No, well, thanks for having me. It is fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, next time we'll bring the bottle of whiskey back. It's just we're too early in the afternoon for that, I guess. Yeah. But, well, with that, this is your host, Ryan Swingley. with your producer Ryan Selby, guests Don Williams and Eric Meeks saying, I mean, I got a new tagline. I got it written down. You know, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but I
must not be that great.
I had ChatGPT write this one, so it may or may not be good. But I don't. If those are the listeners that have been paying attention, I usually try to end the podcast with a tagline. Hopefully, one will stick and it will be our permanent tagline. But this one is: this is ISPLS saying we are exploring boundaries of knowledge, one survey at a time. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to the Hoosier Surveyor Podcast, brought to you by the Indiana Society of Professional Land Surveyors. For more information about the society, please visit ispls.org, or if you are new to the profession, you can find helpful resources at futureindianasurveyor.com.